Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Great to have you with us again. This is a special pre-recording that I am doing because this week is a little crazy for me. I'll be traveling, so I hope everyone's well. I hope everyone is checking on the Facebook page, Earth Ancients Facebook. We have quite a bit of data on there, you got to go to Facebook, Earth Ancients, and go to the group page. Your group page has quite a bit of data on all things ancient Earth, known and unknown civilizations. And I really encourage you to be looking each week at just the plethora of material and information on our guests. I mention each week about this trip coming up to Indonesia with AMI, Ancient Mysteries International. And I just want to highlight that and let you know that the event is November 30th through December 6th. It's headed by Chief Geologist Danny Hillman, who will be taking and actually moving people through the tour. And not only is Danny going to be there, but also Dr. Carmen Bolter, who is the who actually created the Pyramid Code, which was and still is a five-part series, an excellent series on pyramid construction and what a lot of the ancients, what they think the ancients were actually doing when they built the pyramids. A lot of information you don't get from academic textbooks because they do not want to venture into thinking around electromagnetic frequencies, other uses for the pyramids than what they would think, which is a burial chamber, which is so far off the scale, it's ridiculous. So AMI is hosting this event. It's November 30th through December 6th. Bruce Cunningham will be on the show next week with Dr. Carmen Bolter just to talk a little bit about it. But if you mention Earth Ancients now, you'll get a significant discount on the remaining seats that are left. And you want to call 260-417-8548. And it's ancientmysteriesinternational.net. And go to that page, ancientmysteriesinternational.net, to get more details on the program. I'd love to be there with you. I'll probably be with you on some future events. But I am tasked with going to Mexico, as I've mentioned a few times in the past. So check that event out. Ganem Penang is probably the most interesting pyramid out there right now and has been dated what we think is older than the Giza pyramid. But I think at some point the Giza pyramid is going to be dated to thousands and thousands of years earlier than what archaeologists would suggest. So check that out. A number of programs that we've had have touched upon ancient America. We had Scott Walter on, the host of America Unearthed. We've had Frank Joseph talking about ancient Earth. We've talked about giants in America. But my guest today is going to talk to you and discuss with us his discoveries of an America that really is beginning to come to light, an America that's extremely old. There's evidence everywhere, apparently, of extremely old cultures, of cultures that were very, very sophisticated. And according to our guest today, there's a 10,000-year-old history that we just don't know about. My guest is author Ferrum, and he has written two books. The book we're talking about today is Ancient Signposts, but his newest book is La America, the First True Story of the Colonization of America. And author has quite a diverse background. He was a computer analyst and a CEO and founder of the first comprehensive background check company in the U.S. Background check, I guess, checking your background. He's a historical analyst. His analytical training has equipped him to uncover cultural secrets that have been hidden and handed down through secret societies for millennia. Author earned a bachelor's degree in business and has attended numerous technical schools involved in analysis and investigation. So I'm very interested in bringing him on the program. Hi, author. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you for bringing me on the show.
Yeah, really happy to have you. La America is the newest book, but I want to just talk a little bit about Ancient Signposts because it has, I've been looking through it, it's just filled with amazing material. Can you tell us a little bit about what triggered your interest in writing about ancient America? I mean, we talked a little bit off recording here about your family's history, but was there something specifically that triggered your interest to really want to dig into to the ancient America?
Well, to be honest with you, I never had any idea that I would be traveling the route that I'm traveling now. It all started when I retired, and I had the time to start doing my genealogy. And when I was a child, my grandfather, who was an immigrant from England, used to tell me how important we were in England. And I just kind of filed it in the back of my head really didn't think about it a whole lot. And when I started doing my genealogy, I began to find out that our family was very important in history. In fact, I found out that our family had been the head of the Celtic military for over 1,000 years. Now, The Celtic military is probably not prominent in history, in written history, but it is very prominent in the history that has not been written about. And there's probably a political or religious reason for that, as there is for a lot of things that aren't written.
Okay.
But anyway, while I was doing my family genealogy, which happened to be very Celtic and in the area of Galicia, which is the northeast corner of Spain, Denmark, Norway. Norwegians are not Celtic, but the story takes place there too. Scotland and England, and eventually over to the United States, pre-Columbian. But that's how I got interested in it. But along the way, since the Celts were one of the societies that had been handed down these secrets, one of them happened to be sacred geometry that the Masons are so famous for. Well, if you read my book, America, you'll find out it's probably the only place that I know of where you can find out how the Masons started, and they are an offshoot of the Templars. But you won't find, I've asked Masons, I says, where did you guys start? And they say, I don't know. But if you read my book, you'll find out. But That's how this was all involved. And while I was doing my genealogy, being involved in all this, I could not help but stumble across an ancient science, which I named geoglyphology, that's been in existence for, at least 26,000 years. It's been, the things I've found have been carbon dated to at least that far back. But my research has shown that it goes back at least 200,000 years. Lord knows how long before that. But what this does is it takes a geoglyph, and a pyramid is a geoglyph. A geoglyph is any writing on the ground or structure on the ground that tells a story. And using the protocol set up by the ancients thousands of years ago, you can follow the edges of a pyramid or read the geoglyphs on the ground that they set up. And using the protocols, you can tell the territories that they claimed at the time they built the structure. So that's what it's all about.
Okay, so you were researching your family's family tree, and you bumped into some very old family members, and then this led you to this discovery of what you have uncovered, which you've termed geoglyphology, and that's a term that you've have formed based on this these glyphs that you have discovered. Is that correct?
Everything you said is exactly correct. And the reason I came up with geoglyphology, because geo is earth and glyph is a writing. And you've seen the geoglyphs or heard of the geoglyphs on Egyptian walls and stuff like that. Well, ology means to study, so it's naturally geoglyphology. So I just named it what it is.
I got to ask you this question, and this is something that's come up for me, and I've studied glyphs, and of course, there's all types of glyphs. There's the Nazca lines, and there's the glyphs in Egypt, and it seems like every ancient culture has some form of glyph. The glyphs that you show in ancient signposts are, in some cases, only visible from the air. What is your explanation for this? Because to my mind, and it still hasn't been well defined, especially in Peru with the Nazca lines, and above the Palpa area has some amazing glyphs. And in fact, there's even a whole mountain that's been flattened artificially to create a couple of glyphs, and it doesn't look like a glyph anymore when you get close to it. It looks more like a structure for housing something. We're not sure what. But when you show these photographs that have massive glyphs that had to be surveyed in such a way with a level of expertise that we just don't understand, what would you say is was the reasoning to create such a monstrous glyph? Was it because that time in the world's history there were machines that flew, or they're just pretty smart people? Hello?
Hello.
Hi, what happened there?
I don't know. It just clicked off. I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, thankfully we're pre-recording. So my question is, I don't know if you heard it or not, but my question was...
I heard you.
Oh, okay. So go ahead.
The question you asked about how did these lines get drawn and where they could only be seen from the air, I've been asked that question on almost every talk that I've had. And up until recently, I have stayed away from the mystical and the supernatural and the UFO stuff because I had no proof of it yet. And I just accredited it to some ancient instruments and the genius of the people that live back there, because they studied the stars quite heavily, and it's possible that they could have done this using the stars. But I recently discovered that there is an explanation, and it does involve extraterrestrials, and that's what my talk in Michigan in October is going to be about. And so I really hate to discuss it at length here. If you want to see more about this conference, you can go to my website at thefarumfoundation.com, and the information on the lecture is there if you want to.
Well, the bottom line is that you've come to the point, conclusion that it's an artificially or engineered, advanced engineering involved with these geoglyphs.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. All right.
And all the geoglyphs around the world that I'm associated with were put there to mark the territories of the civilization that made them. And of course, just like our boundaries changed today, they changed back in ancient times too. But they started with a set of boundaries. And if you'll read Plato's Critias, he said that back in the Golden Age, that the gods divided up the earth into the number of territories that equaled Poseidon's brothers and sisters. And they divided the earth up and gave each one a territory. Of course, they gave Poseidon Atlantis. And that's the way it all started. And from there, all these boundaries have been changed. And I have found geoglyphs lead to each other. So I have found all the geoglyphs that Plato was talking about and put them together in territories, and they fit together all over the earth just like a jigsaw puzzle. So that's how I know that it's real, because the boundaries go right up against each other and the entire world fits together like a jigsaw puzzle. So it proves itself.
Wow. Let's talk about some of the early chapters of this book, Ancient Signposts. You do a really amazing job of pointing out this the various positions of cities, and one of my favorite ancient cities is one that's been somewhat recently discovered, which is Caral, Peru, which has the oldest pyramid complex in the Americas. And you actually go into quite a bit of detail about the 19 pyramid complexes that are there. Now, can you tell us a little bit about the positioning? Because I'm trying to get my mind around how it like you actually show a number of examples of the positioning pointing directly to Machu Picchu, to in Bolivia, Lake Titicaca, and then you go as far as the Virgin Islands. And how, what was the purpose of doing that? Why would they?
Well,
align
I think you're
them?
Looking at the wrong one, because Caral Peru does not point to those places. Caral Peru outlines the perimeter of South America. In addition, it outlines that ring of islands out there in the Caribbean, Topaz and Saint whatever it is, all those islands. It's a half circle of islands out there. It includes those plus the perimeter of South America. But the reason for that is because that was one of the original territories that Plato was talking about. And I've not listed all of them, but that's one of them. That's the original territories that one of Poseidon's siblings owned, was South America plus the islands out there. And like I said, the other territories fit together just like, and they're outlined just like that one is. And,
okay.
The geoglyph rise in Caral Peru. The geoglyph comes from the angle of the walls of the buildings, and that is fairly common in that particular age of history when they built a, and you'll see a lot in Egyptian times too. They built the walls of the buildings. It looks like some drunk built them, because none of them are parallel. And the reason for that is because they all point to a point on the coast of South America that meets the protocols that they had set up. And so if you run all the walls that are involved in the Caral complex together, they all outline the perimeter of South America, as do these other major geoglyphs that I was talking about.
Okay, so I must be misreading this. So I'm looking at the book, Plate Caral Peru, Plate 3. And it says here, 116 degree radial Machu Picchu, 123 degree radial.
What page are you on?
I'm on page 28. So it's called Endpoints for the Bearings Displayed in the Preceding Photo. And then you draw a straight line. You show angles and things like that, which is fascinating to Lake Titicaca, Machu Picchu. But maybe these are endpoints for.
Okay. Well, I owe you an apology because that is in there. And that is part of the boundaries that we're talking about.
Okay. So I guess the question again is your geoglyphology is such a, it's an ancient system of engineering, and they position Corral's pyramid complex, or this, I guess it's one complex, to intersect with these other locations. So, and what would be the purpose of doing that? Why would they want to line things up like that?
I don't understand your question. The geoglyphs primarily were to outline territories, so I don't understand your question.
Oh, territories. Okay, so they were for territories. I got you.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, and
right.
The first territories that they started out with are these, I think there were seven sisters and brothers of Poseidon. I don't remember the exact amount. But the first territories were like South America. And the other territory that is above that starts at very close to what is now the Canadian-United States border and goes all the way down to the border between Panama and Colombia. So the United States used to include all of Central America at the beginning. And I suspect, this is my own thought, and you can take it for what it's worth. My own thought is the reason that we're allowing so many immigrants to come in from Central America is because the hierarchy of our country knows that that's really part of our country. And I suspect that someday, maybe not while I'm alive, that Central America will be part of the United States. But there's got to be a lot of cleaning up done down there before that happens. And I suspect that if that ever happens, then we'll probably just start at the Mexican border and work our way south with our military.
I know what you're saying. I travel to Mexico frequently, and I have a lot of friends on there. Their economy is in shambles right now. It's it's a mess. Let's talk a little bit.
Like that is, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Go ahead. I was saying that their economy and the fact that there are resources down there that aren't being used to their ultimate use could be one of the reasons why we would take on that territory.
Yeah, I think things are going to have to be politically really different for us to want to get into working with Mexico. There's just so many problems.
Well, let me tell you something. When we had the war with Mexico, it was in the Treaty of Guadalupe that we signed after the war with Mexico, and we established the current boundary south of current boundary between Mexico and the United States. Mm-hmm. It did not include a portion of the boundary of the property that the United States owned at the time, which was down south of California. And the Masons that were in the Senate at the time raised holy. I read the minutes of the Congress during that period just so I could get this information, because I suspected it and I was right, that the Masons are responsible for a lot of this stuff because they're the ones that have the information. But anyway, Masons really raised heck in the Senate and the Congress because we had given away part of the land that we owned. And we did that in return for getting all the land that Mexico had claimed in the New Mexico, Nevada, Texas area. So we kind of split it. And that established that boundary. But in the treaty, it says that the United States and Mexico agree that they will never go to war against each other again. And if you go down to Mexico City in their Central Park, you'll see the busts of, not all of them, but many, many, many American presidents in their park down there. And we are letting their immigrants come into our country. So this kind of validates my thinking.
Interesting. You studied American history in pretty great detail and actually go beyond what our current history tells us
way beyond.
Yeah. Where are the major signposts in America? Now, we've had Scott Walter on talking about the Kensington Stone, and we talked a little bit about the Newport Tower. But where are real markers that you've discovered that show and reveal that America is significantly older than what we're taught?
Okay. Well, Scott Walter and I are colleagues, and we both, at the time that I discovered geoglyphology and discovered the main marker in the North America, were working on the Kensington Rune Stone and the Newport Tower. I just happened to figure them out before he did, but we are both up to speed on what's going on there, and we work together when we can. But anyway, after I discovered geoglyphology, there was a saying in the Celtic lore that somebody asked, "Where do you think the Templar treasure is?" And somebody in authority said, "The Templar treasure is buried under a giant triangle that is so big that only God can see it." So when I started applying sacred geometry to North America, I started looking for this giant triangle. And Newport Tower was a place of mystery, and it was accredited to many ancient theories. So I went there first to start applying this sacred geometry and looking for this triangle. And Scott Walter, I'll give him credit for it, had discovered that the Newport Tower had eight legs instead of six like they do in Europe. Most people thought it was an old windmill or something of that nature. Well, the windmills in Europe have six legs, but this had eight legs. And so, being the devious thinker that I am, I figured, I'll bet you that means 80 degrees. And also Scott Walker had already figured out that the Newport Tower was oriented in 093 degrees. In fact, while I'm talking about 093 degrees, any geoglyph on the Earth to be legitimate will have either 090 or 360 in it somewhere. Okay. Well, the Newport Tower was something different, and it had the 093 radio that it was oriented to. And I subtracted 80 from 93, and I came up with 13. Now, since I was just starting, I started inching my way up on Google Earth all the way along this line, which is about, 700 miles long or something, looking at the entire Earth on the way up until I found this place in the St. Lawrence Seaway, this island, called La Haute Cote Nord, which means the highest dimension north. And I said, damn, this thing goes right through this island, and it says the highest dimension north. So I figured, okay, there's a point. Now I've got two sides to the triangle, because the opposite of 093 is 273. So if I just disregarded 093 because it goes out over the ocean. So now I got 273 and 013 for two sides of the triangle. And I said, if I can get that third side, I bet you that I'll be onto something. So in my research prior to that, I had noticed that, I had noticed that at the place I had already discovered that Henry Sinclair landed when he came over here. Everybody else says he disappeared, but I can prove to you mathematically and with his geoglyphs on the ground that he lived in Druid Hill Park in Baltimore, Maryland. But anyway,
what year was that?
He started out from Scotland in 1398, so I guess he probably got here about 1399.
Wow.
And he came over here with my relatives, too, since my relative, Henry Sinclair at the time was the head of the Celtic society, and mm-hmm. my relatives, having been the head of the military for over 1,000 years, came over here with him, and I found out where both my relatives went and where he went. But that's a whole other story.
Besides, let me just stop you real quickly. Did you find that out through documentation that your relatives left to you, or did you just kind of trace it in Europe to some activities that they you know got on a ship and came over to America?
A combination of both. For instance, my relatives started a town, and I can't remember the name of it. It starts with a C, in England. They started the town and laid out the streets. And the streets are geoglyphed. I mean, they're obvious that when I first looked at them. Mm-hmm. And they point to the Fareham Tower on the north side of St. Lawrence Seaway, which is a fortress built by the Templars for keeping the Norse out of North America. But, you know, and I could go on and on for hours about all this stuff, but
sure.
To get back to your, what did I find in North America first? So now on the Newport Tower, we got the 013 radio and the 273 radio. And now I've got to find this other side of the triangle. So I remembered that I had found this triangle down in Druid Hill Park down in Baltimore, Maryland. And it had two of the angles in that triangle were the same as the ones. One of the angles was the same as the one that I had found in Newport. So I took the other two angles that were in that particular triangle in Baltimore and applied them to running it from the island at the end of the 013 radio. I applied an angle there and applied it, and it made the proper angle down at the bottom. And I says, if this is the triangle that I'm looking for, then the tip of this triangle is going to point to something important. And I was very excited at the time. And so I got on Google and I went down real close to the earth. And sure enough, right at the exact point of that was a place called Inspiration Peak. And research I've done on that shows that it has a historical background also. But Inspiration Peak combined... Well, the Kensington Runestone was found 22 miles south of Inspiration Peak, and the Kensington Runestone was engraved by either the Templars or Celts, and you can tell by the style of writing who wrote it. But anyway, Kensington Runestone gives you the clues and the angles off of Inspiration Peak and Newport Tower. If you combine what's on the Kensington Runestone with that triangle I just described that I found, it gives you the territory that was given to the Templars by the Portuguese for helping them rid...
So let's focus real quickly on... because you brought this Newport Tower up, and you're saying that this is an important find. In your book, you actually use it as kind of a... it's a focal point, as you're describing right now, for the discovery of other areas. So Scott Walter says that the Newport Tower was an ancient observatory. Do you believe that's what it was designed for? Did it have more?
I'm glad you brought that up, because the majority of the geoglyphs. And this just tells you how smart the people were that did these things. The majority of the geoglyphs around the world have both astronomical and geoglyphical aspects to them. And they were able to combine both of these aspects into these geoglyphs that they built. And so, yes, it was an astronomical, now I won't say it's an observatory, but there was messages left in the angles that do show the solstices. And in addition to that, the position that the built tower was built in and the orientation of it, it lends itself to the geoglyphology. So these people were able to combine both of these aspects into these monuments and geoglyphs that they made. which shows mm-hmm. how intelligent they were.
Okay, and would you be able to tell us what these people were? Were these the descendants of the Mississippians, or were they even before that? I mean,
they were way before that. And okay, for instance, we know when Stonehenge was built at 3500 BC, and the way you find Inspiration Peak, there's only one radio in the whole world other than Newport Tower that points to Inspiration Peak. Or that's not true. There are several others. But the way I found it was I followed a radio off of Stonehenge to Inspiration Peak.
Wow.
And that's how I confirmed that my finding off of Newport Tower was correct. Since then, I've found some other ones. But
okay.
Where was I going with this?
Well, we were talking about Newport Tower, and I know that from Scott's description, it's been carbon dated to be about 500 years old, but perhaps it's older because maybe the organic material that they tested was on at one level. And actually, Scott went into quite a bit of detail about there being a need to do some ground penetrating radar studies of the area at various parts in front of the Newport Tower, because there appears to be some construction that is covered up. So the tower could be extremely old.
Well, when it was carbon dated, it was carbon dated. I think it had two carbon dates, and they couldn't figure that out because the carbon dating showed 1498 and 1478 and 1678, which is exactly 200 years apart.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect that it was originally built in 1498 or 1478 and destroyed and rebuilt exactly 200 years later in 1698.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the reason for those two different things. So if you want to know how old it is, I think it was built by the Celts in 1478. And
okay.
The two carbon dates are explained in my book.
Okay. So let's stay in America for a bit. I do want to ask you about the Mexican pyramids and the Chinese pyramids, because you have quite a bit of information in there. But your main focus in this newest book, La America, and then the book that we're focused on right now, which is Ancient Signposts, has to do with this ancient study. Now, did you trace back where this geoglyphology kind of originates, the science behind it?
And it has to do with the extraterrestrials that I'm going to talk about in my lecture in Michigan in October. So
okay.
I can't go into it with you until then.
Can you talk a little bit about... So it was handed down by another race of beings, basically. So it's not terrestrial. It's extraterrestrial.
No,
it's, boy, I'll tell you that.
Most of the stuff was built by humans, but it was engineered by other people who are still in this world helping us. They are educating us, and that's part of my lecture. These people have been here for thousands of years, and they are here to educate us. And they're having a really tough time, and their biggest problem is we refuse to stop making war. And I think that's the reason the United States has taken on the role, as expensive as it is, of being the world protector, because the major goal of these people is to have world peace. And so that the entire world can live together. But
yeah,
and we're getting there. Every place the United States goes, we give it back to the people we went to, and they're friends of ours.
Mm-hmm.
So it happened to Japan, happened in Vietnam, happens everywhere we go. So we're slowly pacifying the entire world. And I think that's what the United States' job is right now. And unless you know that, you think we're a bunch of idiots.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's interesting. How old would you say established civilization is in America? You say 10,000 years, but
that's just for the the current, that was since the Ice Age. You know, you have different you have different civilizations that have come and gone after each apocalypse. And the last one was the Ice Age. And so most of the history you find today goes back to after the Ice Age. But now that we're finding the Bosnian Pyramid, the Indonesian Pyramids, there's one in Central America we just found, and all three of those pyramids are constructed exactly the same. They're constructed by taking a mountain and whittling it down and then placing cement blocks on the side of it so it doesn't erode. So, and those are 26,000 years old. So we're getting into it into now before the Ice Age. So we're beginning to see different aspects of our civilization being unearthed right now. And in my book, Lemerica, I hit upon the fact that on the December 21st, 2012, we entered into the age of Aquarius, which is supposed to be a transition from greed and hate into wisdom, understanding, and peace. So it's going to be, you know, like fighting ISIS, it's going to be tough until we finally get there. But when we get there, it's going to be really nice.
Well, it's interesting that in your books, you describe what a lot of very old people left us, and you give some great examples of the Chinese pyramids, and you actually compare them to pyramids in Central America, the Mexican pyramids. And can you tell us a little bit about what you discovered that makes them similar? Because I'm looking at this one picture. It's Chinese pyramid number 6. And it's beautifully geometric in shape. But it's made from mud, earthen rather than stone. So how can you compare those two, Mexican slash over Chinese?
The Chinese, I'm sure, had some covering that held the dirt in place, and it's been so long since I did that research. I'm not exactly sure how they were constructed, but the shape of them is what would denote that they were built about the same time. During time periods, like I was telling you, these 26,000-year-old pyramids that we're finding today, they are similar all over the world, and because they were built around the same time. Now we get into the Mesoamerican pyramids, and the Chinese pyramids were most likely built around the same time. In fact, the Chinese pyramids are called the Turkish pyramids. And what we just found in Turkey is what's that new find in Turkey? Göbekli Tepe.
Göbekli Tepe, yeah.
Göbekli Tepe.
Oh, we've talked about it many times.
Okay, well, that's geoglyph. And I've, on the ones that they've uncovered already, I've done studies on that. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be, you know, you've we have state maps, we have and world maps, right? My take on Göbekli Tepe, being a geoglyphologist, is that is the world map that designates all these territories I was telling you about. And like Corral, Peru, is the state map. So that's my take on Göbekli Tepe, and it came after the Ice Age, so it fits right in with this story that Plato told, that after the Ice Age and in the Golden Age, that the world was split up into sections. And I would bet my bottom dollar that when they fully uncover Göbekli Tepe, it's going to be a geoglyphic map of the territories of the world.
Interesting. It is a fascinating place. What do you think the reason is for pyramids? Because ancient culture seems to proliferate the construction of pyramids, and I mean I understand in some ways that they were used for various reasons. But what is your feeling about pyramids?
Well, all I can say for sure is that every one of them is a geoglyph. Okay. That fits into the geoglyphology scheme, okay? Every one of them, not all of them, but many of them, I have studied, and they all outline a territory. And if you look on my website, www.thefarumfoundation.com, you'll see the geoglyphs of Indonesia, and you'll see how those fit in. They are the southern in the southern part of the Japanese territory, which was one of the originals. And they were put there to connect the Japanese territory to South America. And South America connects to the Giza pyramids. And all these things are connected, and they're all maps to show what these people were doing at the particular time they made these things.
Mm-hmm. So Scott Walter believes that the things like the Kensington Stone and Newport Tower and another a number of other finds were land grants or land surveys. As an example, he believes the Kensington Stone was a Templar marker that granted them the rights to certain landforms. Do you think that perhaps the earth was kind of divided up at some point and said these pyramids are major markers for surveys, and this is your land, this is my land, so on and so forth? Or is it more intricate than that?
That was one of the purposes. When they built the pyramid, they took into consideration what it should be as far as territorial-wise, and they were always orientated in that manner. Hmm. Now, the Giza pyramids, it looks like it's just north, south, east, west. But if you follow those lines out, you'll find they intersect at some very interesting points on the Earth. But the pyramids, just like all the other geoglyphs in the world, serve many purposes. One, I suspect, is electromagnetic generation. The Bosnian pyramids, you can take an instrument up to the top of the pyramid, and it's generating electricity from the top of the pyramid. And the strange mm-hmm. thing about it is the further away from the pyramid you get, the stronger the signal gets. How can you figure that?
Yeah.
But, that's another aspect. And a lot of people say they were energy generators and all kinds of stuff. So these people yeah. who made them were so intelligent, I wouldn't put anything past somebody discovering it.
It's funny because you described, I think you said to me that you had a you actually visited the Bosnia pyramid. Mm-hmm. And there's another one that's been discovered in South America that has the same kind of construction where cement was formed with, cement was leveled and made into flat panels that actually mm-hmm. Conformed the hill into a pyramid. And
the Indonesian pyramids are exactly the same.
Yeah. Which ones in Indonesia have that same kind of a construction? Because it's a whole level of pyramid building that mm-hmm. is kind of, it kind of upsets the Egyptologists because
yes,
it's not a standard pyramid by their reckoning. And this is when Hawass comes to Bosnia and says, this is not a pyramid. Well, it's not a pyramid according to him.
Exactly.
So
he'll lose a lot of power if he admits that there were some other pyramids besides his, you know.
But, well, older pyramid design. Older, but what did you come up with in Indonesia that has that same configuration of
mountain?
Once
again, I have a website that's devoted totally to the Indonesian pyramids, and it's on mm-hmm. my website. And the Indonesian pyramids, the Central America pyramids that you were talking about, and the Bosnian pyramids all have the exact same construction. They were hills that were whittled down with cement slabs plastered up again the side of them to keep them from eroding away.
Mm-hmm. So would you say Ganon Panang is a example of that? Looks like it.
I'm not real familiar with that. I've heard the name, and I probably mm-hmm. looked at it, but I haven't studied it.
Okay. Yeah. I it's looking more and more like it. Smaller version of Bosnia and a smaller version of it's the one in South America is the hummingbird pyramid, according to
Well, you're talking about hummingbirds in Nazca. There's a hummingbird outline on the ground, and mm-hmm. the feathers of that hummingbird I followed out, and there's another territory. So all these wow. things are there for a reason. They're not just there because somebody wanted to draw a hummingbird. They're there for a reason.
In America, these markers, these geometric forms and shapes and things like that, does it pretty much go from coast to coast, or is it just the East Coast that has these noticeable?
That is an excellent question. Primarily, you have hundreds, if not thousands, of geoglyphs from the East Coast up to the Mississippi River, because that was the primary area that was settled prior to Columbus by the Celts. And you even mentioned the mound culture. That's the area that they were in. And these mounds that they built, I think they built them around 700 BC until 1000 AD or something. I'm not really sure. I can't remember right now. But the mound culture was primarily east of the Mississippi River. And when you get further west, you start losing the number of mounds that you see, which means that there was not that many people out there. It was it's desert, so that makes sense. But if you go all the way to the coast of California and Oregon and in that area, you start seeing these things again just right on the coast, which means that there were people that were going up and down the coast of North and South America, even though there weren't people in the west of the Mississippi. So it shows just exactly what you would expect. It shows a high population of pre-Columbian people east of the Mississippi, and very little settlement west of the Mississippi, except on the coast.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us some examples of structures that you find? Of course, Mexico on the Pacific side has a lot, but that's really far Central America. But and of course, there's a number of excavations that have been done up and down California, and in some cases, they've unearthed giants, people that are 9-10 feet in height and huge.
South America, they found some 25 feet tall.
Wow. But I mean, are you familiar with some of these pyramids or ancient structures up and down the west coast of the U.S.?
There are geoglyphs there.
Okay.
There's one structure that comes to mind that is very prominent, and it's not been widely circulated. You know where Malibu, California is, no doubt.
Sure.
Okay. Off the coast of Malibu, by only like 10 miles, there is an underwater structure that was just discovered within the past 5 or 10 years that is man-made. It's a mile and a half wide, and it looks like one of these submarine entrances that you saw in the Second World War, where the Germans put their submarines underground into a side of a mountain. Mm-hmm. That's what this thing looks like. And it's got the posts that support the overhead part. And it supposedly leads into underground tunnels that go all and up and down the West Coast. Of course, nobody that can get down there and do it is going to tell you that. Mm-hmm. But the structure is very visible on Google if you look under the...
I think I have seen that one. Yeah, that was. Yeah. I wasn't sure about that, but I did see it about a year ago.
What I was leading up to, that if you go up on the hill just off of Malibu and right across from the structure, there is a Sphinx-like carving that nobody has noticed, except a few people, or I wouldn't know about it. A Sphinx-like structure that looks just like the Sphinx in Egypt, overlooking this structure that's underground, under the water.
So, it's in Malibu, this rock carving?
It's in Malibu, yes. Yes. Hmm. It looks, if you look at it from the side, it looks exactly like the Sphinx.
Hmm.
But it's a little rougher cut, so you don't really notice it unless you're looking for it.
Interesting. I know in the desert, Imperial Desert of California, there are some massive glyphs that you can only see by flying over them. Have you charted any of those in their relation to any of the other surveying that you've done?
Well, most of the ones east of the Mississippi fit the protocols of the ancients that mm-hmm. appeared to have been handed down from thousands of years ago. The ones in the Southwest America tend to be more localized and more like freelancing rather mm-hmm. than engineered.
Okay.
Like, for instance, the one you're talking about, I know the ones, they've got a fence around them, and they're figures of people, right?
Right, yeah.
Those particular ones were no doubt built by the American Indian natives and probably only date back like maybe 1,000, maybe 1,500 years. But
okay.
And the geoglyphs I'm talking about on east of the Mississippi also only go back that far. However, they have the angles and everything that meet the protocols of the ancients, where the ones in the Southwest do not.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Mississippian culture? You have quite a bit to say about it in your book here, Ancient Signposts. What did you discover anything unique about them? Because they were mound builders, and mm-hmm. it's funny because when I first started studying the mounds, to my mind they were a weak version of a pyramid, and in some cases they're actually engineered in such a way that at one time they may have been perfectly flat on top for not only observing celestial happenings, but perhaps a landing pad because they're so well constructed. And when people hear me say landing pad, I think of thousands and thousands of years ago, and you know, technology moves pretty quick. We see how quickly technology is moving now, but I personally think that a lot of these glyphs that you're describing were only able to be created with the use of some kind of flying vehicle. They're just too perfect.
Well, I think you're probably right. You'd have to be, you have to be above them and know where to point them. Like, for instance, having a GPS map of the world. Like, you'd have to have like Google Earth.
So Google Earth, exactly. Yeah.
You'd have to have in your craft a thing like Google Earth and know where to point them to. But
right.
Even though they may be flat on top or round on top, if you go down to the edges, the sides of them, where the pyramid meets the ground, you'll find that most of them have a straight line. And instead of being round, they're comprised of multiple straight lines. And if you take and project these straight lines, then you get your geoglyph.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the mound culture and
right.
Geoglyphs. One of the biggest mysteries in the United States is the Snake Mound in Ohio. You're familiar with that one, right?
Sure. Yeah, classic. Beautifully done.
Okay, well, and put this one in your pipe and see how it smokes. Remember I told you before that the 090 radial of any geoglyph has to exist? Well, it's also mm-hmm. the sacred radial of any geoglyph. So the 090 radial usually points to someplace important. Guess where the 090 radial of the snake? The snake, if you take the straight sides of the snake, you know, mm-hmm. they're circular and then they're straight and then they're circular and they're straight all along the snake.
Mm-hmm.
And to find the geoglyph, you project the straight sides of the snake outward. Guess where the 090 radial on the front of the snake points?
Mm, where?
Washington, D.C.
Wow.
So it's this geoglyphology really uncovers a lot of interesting facts. And the more you uncover, the more you're able to pin down the dates that all this stuff happened.
Mm-hmm. Who do you think the Mississippians were? Were they from As an example, we had a gentleman on the program who spoke about Lemuria and Mu and how they were a pyramid culture, and accounts for a number of the pyramids in Indonesia and in the Pacific Rim, the whole Pacific Ocean, actually, not just the Rim.
I think that's probably correct.
And why wouldn't they come to the land now known as America to build pyramids? Of course, to my mind, I don't think there's any stone pyramid in the Americas that I'm familiar with. United States of America. Mexico is just covered in pyramids. In fact, the Yucatan Peninsula, they keep finding them there. They keep finding ruins that are partly buried because there was some kind of undulation, maybe a tsunami or something, that just took out a good portion of the Gulf of Mexico side. And there's huge areas that are buried and they're still finding pyramids. But in the USA, I don't know of any structures that could be considered stone pyramids, but there's quite a few of these mounds on the eastern area. And I guess my question to you is, what is your feeling about Mississippians? Who were these people? What was that culture?
Well, first of all, to talk about what you were mentioning a while ago, the fact that there are no stone pyramids in North America kind of validates what I stated before about North America being a separate entity from originally North America and Central America were together, but eventually they separated into North America, Central America, and South America. And the fact that there's no stone pyramids in North America kind of validates what I said before. But as far as the mound culture goes, it's obvious from looking at the textiles, the pottery, the symbols, and the mound geoglyphs that the mound culture was either, like you say, from Lemuria or one of the ancient cultures. But I suspect even more that they were probably from Europe and more closely aligned with the Celts, because there's so much in their symbolism that mimics the Celtic culture that I have to believe that the majority of them, if not being Celts, adopted the culture of the Celts from the Celts having visited them at one time.
The funny thing about Mississippian culture, and it's funny that you brought this up, the separation of society or separation of exchanging of technology, is that I have seen in a number of museums, I haven't been there myself, but I've seen photographs of pottery and sculpture that is extremely reminiscent of Maya. Mayan pottery, and the figures actually look Mayan. And we're talking about up in the Mississippi, Alabama area.
Exactly.
Why they wouldn't build pyramids if they are up that far is beyond me, but it does show that there must have been trade routes from Central America up and through North America. And why organizations like the National Geographic and, of course, the hallowed halls of the Smithsonian Institute haven't talked more about this.
They don't talk about it. They hide it.
We know that, but it's such a huge, it would be such a, I mean, here's these sculptures that are plain to see in these museums, and yet they don't want to bring it up because it just goes against their historic notions. And I just don't understand.
Well, if you came to my lecture in October, you might understand a little better.
We're going to have to get a recording of that, Arthur, so we can play it on our program. You keep referring to it. I'll have to go, okay, Arthur's releasing this.
Let me tell you that the presentation is going to be history-changing, let me tell you.
Yeah. I have an international audience listening, so I don't think – I mean, some people would love to be there. If you could stream it, I'll put it on the website. We could have people pay for a streaming.
Well, I have
media.
A feeling that it's going to be included in a documentary sometime in the future, so it probably won't be available for a while.
Oh, okay. So there's a camera crew that's going to be there.
Oh yeah,
definitely. Interesting. Let's talk a little bit more about the pyramid work that you've done in the book, Ancient Signposts. You show these Chinese pyramids, you show Mexican pyramids, and then you make a very interesting statement. And I don't know, you must have figured this out, but you say that there's an Egyptian influence in all of these pyramids. What is that? How did you come to that conclusion? Is there a certain engineering or the way they're positioned on the ground or something that would make you say that they're influenced by the Egyptians or Egyptian engineering or whatever?
Well, I wrote that book like 6 years ago, and when I wrote it, I indicated, yes, there was an Egyptian influence. But since then, my research has shown that it wasn't the Egyptians that influenced the other people. It was the people I'm going to talk about, and here I go again, in my October presentation, that affected the entire world.
So are we talking about the Nephilim of Zechariah Sitchin's 12th planet in the Earth Chronicles? Or
Zechariah Sitchin was very close to being right on target.
Okay. So that's the Nephilim. Interesting. Okay. I wish I had known that ahead of time.
When that gives you something to read.
Yeah. I can't ask you about things like Poverty Point. You make some interesting comparisons with that area, and you actually show some very interesting sight lines and glyphology in that too. Can you talk a little bit about Poverty Point and why it's so important?
Poverty Point's just north of Michigan. It is not on the other side, on the Canadian side of the. Of the Great Lakes, yeah. Poverty Point is not all that significant in that it is just another part of the, it's one of the geoglyphs that designate the northern portion of the what we now know as the United States. There's a lot of other, this brings around something we were talking about with the mound culture, where during the Golden Age, you have one geoglyph that designates an entire continent or territory. The Poverty Point and a number of other geoglyphs throughout the eastern United States, it's almost as if these different tribes or cultures were handed out assignments, because these geoglyphs of the mound culture designate a portion of the boundary of the United States, and then another mound culture will take up where they left off and designate another section. And these people all over the mound culture seem to have a piece of the puzzle. And it's incredible how somebody in Ohio would have a piece of the puzzle where somebody in Louisiana would have another piece. So that kind of shows, you know, history groups the mound culture together, and rightfully so.
You have an interesting photo of a disc from Moundville, Alabama, which is close to, I guess there's mounds out there. I've never been to Alabama, but it's called the All-Seeing Eye.
What page are you on? Do you have
135, and you make a really interesting statement. You say this is the same symbol found on our $1 bill and in Egyptian history. And I think I have seen this in the past, but the all-seeing eye was found in a burial somewhere. And the carving, can you talk a little bit about the actual carving on it? And I guess it's circa 1200 AD, so it's old, but it's not thousands and thousands of years old. It's old.
Yeah. Well, this would be right during the time that the Celtic culture was settled in Eastern America. And as such, they would tend to pass on some Egyptian history. And the all-seeing eye, the first time that I know that it appeared was during in the Egyptian culture. And the Celts and the Etruscans and the Portuguese being people that this was passed down to, if they came over here, then the all-seeing eye would be part of that. That's supposed to be the all-seeing eye of God, that he watches everything. And so it would be normal if the Celts were had an influence on the eastern United States for that symbol to appear, and it does in many cases around the Europe and North America.
Interesting. You know, you have a whole section on the next page, and then on 137, you have the Newark Holy Stones artifacts discovered by David Warwick, a land survey in 1816. And these were all found in burial mounds. And my God, this the catalog limestone box, I've seen pictures of this sculpture before, but that's very, it looks very European. You know,
Well, let me tell you something. The Celts, before Jesus came, were Jewish for the most part. You know, Jesus, it's not any surprise that Jesus was a Jew. Will you agree?
Everybody says that, right? No, yeah.
Okay. Well, if you look at true history, the Celts were primarily Jewish until Jesus came along, and that's this is in my second book, America. And that's why you see things. This is scattered all through Eastern North America are Jewish artifacts. And this is just one of them. It's on page 138 of Ancient Signposts, in case anybody's following it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's all kinds of Jewish artifacts that are found as a result of the Celtic influence in North America. And this is just validates that the Celts came over here, because you see both the Celtic symbols and the Jewish symbols all over the eastern United States, and they were one and the same.
It's just a very sophisticated little sculpture. It looks like, actually, if I look at this sculpture, this Decalog limestone piece, it looks like it was manufactured in some manner, but maybe it was carved. It just
it
looks
was
very.
The people didn't watch television back then. They had plenty of time to do this kind of thing. And you can see it's pretty rough. It's pretty rough hewn. It's not made by machine.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but I'm looking at the sculpture, the little sculpture of this figure with these symbols around.
Guess what? Go over to the next page, 138, you see all the symbols on there?
Yeah.
That's a Jewish version of the Ten Commandments. You ready for that?
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
And it was found in North America.
Wow. So what is your feeling? I mean, you've done a lot of research on America. What is your feeling about the current government structure? I mean, the Templars apparently, you know, have left their mark. But the Masons seem to be everywhere. And the Masons are still around now. And on our own money, there's Mason. You know, symbology and things like that. And I mentioned this to Scott Walter, and I'll ask you the same question. My feeling is that there's a sacredness about this country we're in. And there are certain things that are being coming to light that maybe were put into motion hundreds, if not thousands of years ago. And we are reaping either the benefits or the horror of each of these things that have been put into place. What do you feel about America?
I think you're right on target with everything you've just said. This country, I believe, was sacred for a long time, and I suspect that's why it was not inhabited by Europeans until like 1,000 years ago. And that's why there's no pyramids here. It was a sacred place, where Native Americans lived off the lands and were very spiritual. Even the Native Americans of today are that way. They live off the land and are very spiritual, because that is the way that man has been taught by these extraterrestrials for thousands of years to live. And that's the way we should still be living. But when the Templars died out, they were not they were priests, they were not married. The Masons took over and went from a spiritual culture to a capitalist culture. And they came over here and took all the resources and sold them in Europe and made a profit on it. But whether that's good or bad, I'm not going to judge that. But yes, I do think that this is a special place and it has a special purpose. And one of these days, I think that will be fulfilled. But who knows when that will be?
Well, you use and you identify a lot of symbology, and you identify geoglyphs and geoglyphology. And it all has certain amount. Some of it actually activates unseen forces. Some of it, you know, I mean, it's almost like alchemy, the way some of these things work. What do you say about these sacred symbols and their positions and things like that? Do you think that that's kind of helping with mankind, or what? What do you say about that?
One thing I'd like to say is that the most of the sacred symbols to represent God from ancient times have been perverted into evil symbols by someone or some group to invalidate their use. A good one, an example is the pentagram. Upside down, it's evil. Right side up, but people still think it's a pentagram if it's right side up now, because that's the type of thing that they've been taught. But anyway, I forgot your question.
Well, the symbology of the glyphs, the symbology that's found in
I'm back on track again.
Yeah.
The symbology, I think, is not as important as the spirituality that's applied to these things. The symbology, there's a whole number of symbols that I'm going to present in my presentation and tell what they mean. But they're just symbols. The real kicker comes when you have to apply spirituality to them. And if you want to know what ancient spirituality and the spirituality that was taught by the Lemurians was, all you have to do is go to Tibet and see the Tibetan monks. That is the type of spirituality carried to its extreme that we have been taught for thousands of years but have let go of. These monks are able to make you see things that you really don't see. They're able to levitate things. They're able to change things into different forms because they have studied this all their life and they've not been distracted by outside sources. But yes, are things that are mystical, but the symbols are not what does it. It's the people.
Interesting. What did you, what was the goal of Ancient Signposts and the new book, La America? What were the goals for the reader? For them to understand that there is an ancient culture in America that they need to realize that our history is wrong? Or what's the takeaway? I mean, it doesn't have to be a single answer. I'm just asking you. I'm just curious because you've put a lot of time into this book. And I don't know if La America is the same number of pages, but this this Ancient Signposts is filled with wonderful illustrations and maps and things like that.
Yeah, well, La America, I think, was 400 and something pages long. It's a pretty good book, but small print. But what I wanted to present with Ancient Signposts, and it's somewhat dry reading because it's more of a scientific book. I wanted to present and explain geoglyphology. And the book pretty well does that all over the world. It kind of explains these different monuments and geoglyphs all over the world. So that was the point of Ancient Signposts. And then I went to America after I started researching my family history. And America is more about the Ferrum history down through time, clear up to today, as a matter of fact, and the history that was associated with them and the Celts at the time. And since they were head of the Celtic military, they were right on the front lines for all the history that occurred from the birth of Christ until around 1400. So there's a lot of history there, and that made it easier to trace my genealogy, because all you had to do was go to the records, and since we're so high profile, it was easy to find them.
Mm-hmm.
But the Americas, I wanted to present my family's role in history and the history that had been distorted and the and left out of the history of America. And this geoglyphology gave me the opportunity to prove that by physical means rather than just theory. And I thought that was needed to be presented.
Well, they're both very interesting books. They're both available on Amazon. My guest today has been author Farham, and a lot of really, really great research. I wish we could get some highlights from this presentation that you're going to be giving. But I guess we'll
I'm
have
sorry
to wait.
I'm sorry that I tried to sidestep all that, but it's so different that I just can't give it out until then.
Yeah, I got to ask
then,
you.
Yeah,
I got to ask you. You when you were in the military, you were air traffic controller, and then you were hired by the FAA. How much of your working life was spent as an air traffic controller?
32 years.
Oh, that's quite a bit of time.
I went to the military as an air traffic controller when I was 17 mm-hmm. years old. So
wow.
Then when I was in the military for 9 years and got out and went directly to work for the FAA.
So I could see why you'd have a huge interest in Google Earth and Google Earth Pro, because you're looking at the planet from a pretty good high elevation. And but I mean, as somebody with this kind of a mindset, you must have really developed a good sense of these geoglyphs from the elevated position. And of course, you're not going to tell us what off-world beings are influencing us, but that background really went into the creation of these two books.
My research on my family history did more to drive me than anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would imagine that you wanted to know what your relatives were up to.
Right.
Well, hey, listen, it's been a pleasure speaking with you, and I hope that we the way it's going, it sounds like we're going to see you on what's that program? Oh, Ancient Aliens or something. You'll probably be in one of the episodes. Okay. Well, listen, much continued success, and I hope to have you on again if you're publishing another book in the near future, Arthur.
Okay, and I'm writing a book about what I'm going to present. So eventually you will get it.
Okay. Yeah, no, I did see that promotion, and it looks like a really great a group of people, and you got some dynamite you're going to light off in that conference.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. A pleasure, and we'll be in touch.
The pleasure's been all mine. Thank you, Cliff.
Okay. Bye. So that's this week's program. I hope you enjoyed it. Remember, next week is Carmen Bolter. Dr. Bolter will be speaking about the Pyramid Code. Thanks.